Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to another episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today I have the pleasure of having Chris Jackman join me. He's the COO of Carolina Holistic Medicine in South Carolina. He's an advanced practice registered nurse and certified nurse practitioner. And I'm super excited to have him today because I always love to hear different views from different practitioners, you know, their thoughts, because as you all know, none of us are alike, right? Which means none of us usually can get well in the exact same way. So I love being able to bring just different options from these practitioners and how they go about tackling this horrible thing we call Lyme, right? Lyme and beyond. Lyme, the umbrella of Lyme, all the stuff that goes under this umbrella, right? So super excited to dive into it. Chris, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Tanya, for having me. I think it's great what you're doing, and I'm excited to talk.
Awesome. All right, well, just give us a little bit of background, like what even got you into Lyme disease?
Sure. So I have a personal experience in Lyme as far as family members. As far as I know, I don't have Lyme disease. Obviously, you know, that's probably a lot of people's story up until they realize they have it. So, you know, because Lyme can sit dormant for so long and certain things can trigger it, I don't think anyone can definitely say I don't have Lyme, but as far as I know, I don't have Lyme disease. But my younger brother battled Lyme, and I treated him, and my sister-in-law has Lyme, and I've been treating her as well. And both of them have gone through the ebbs and flows of I'm better and hooray and this is exciting to oh no, it's back and now I'm miserable again, and you know, the roller coaster of Lyme disease. So I have that personal experience. Also, I work for Carolina Holistic Medicine, which you had mentioned, and my boss, Dr. Salibi, he really did a lot of work in Lyme disease, and you know, went in and did work with some of the big Lyme experts around the world, and really got to know Lyme and became a Lyme literate MD. So when I joined his practice, he gave me all of his knowledge, and that really turned my interest up from a six up to a 10, because the more you know about it and the more you realize how it affects people's lives, the more passionate, you know, you become, because you realize that this can really save people's lives and save people's lives in a quick way if done properly, you know. So Lyme is a long journey, but pulling people out of the depth and despair, that can happen quickly, even with just a diagnosis. And, you know, I think you had mentioned to me, I think it was off air, you had mentioned to me just knowing that other people like me exist and other people have Lyme. So people come in and they don't know what they have. They're miserable. They're you know, contemplating some really bad things. And then you're able to diagnose them and show them that they have Lyme disease. And sometimes that alone is enough to pull them out of that hole that they're in and just give them some hope. And then you can start the process of working to get the disease under control. But the hope is to try to get things turned around and mentally, and then work on the physical aspect of it once you get the diagnosis made and the treatment started. So that was kind of where my passion started. And then, you know, just the more Lyme patients you treat, the more you become obsessed with it, of learning as much you can about it, learning about all the different treatments, learning about what works and what doesn't. And it becomes a really addicting puzzle that you, you know, you never probably will completely solve, but you want to figure, get as close to it as possible.
Yeah, that's, and you nailed it right there when you said you kind of become obsessed with it, right? Because it's so in depth. There's so many layers to it. It's so many people don't know about it. And yeah, I've become a little obsessed with it, right? Hence the podcast is one of the things I do. You know,
sure.
I'm well, but yeah. I love to share the information because like you said, it is truly a roller coaster. I mean, I've seen it over the years. People get well, they get sick again, you know, whether it's a new infection or the old infection wreaked havoc because, you know, we allowed our immune system to shut down, whatever the case may be. And mm-hmm. then, like you said, a lot of times we don't even know that we have it. And then when we finally do get our diagnosis, I know for me personally, I was over the moon. I thought, oh my gosh, finally, after 7 years, somebody is acknowledging that something is wrong with me. And then when I learned what it was, because I thought it was only something a dog got, I thought, maybe right. I don't want to have this. But yeah, just that acknowledgement of I actually have something wrong with us. And at least you can have hope then because there's something to fix, you know, in my case.
Yeah, you have a target to shoot at, right? You have something to actually go after instead of just these random various symptoms that you've been chasing.
Chasing all the symptoms, putting band-aids on it, you know, pharmaceuticals, all that stuff. And I mean, I know for me, I became suicidal because nothing was wrong with me. It was all in my head. And if nothing's wrong with me, I can never get well. And that's just simply not okay to be gaslit by these doctors.
Right.
And so I appreciate what you do within the Lyme community to help us. So, all right. So let's kind of dive into it. Let's start with testing. You know, that's a huge problem in itself, right? There's so many problems.
Yeah.
What kind of testing do you like? Is it, do you go for labs? Do you do muscle testing out of your clinical diagnosis?
Yeah. So, I mean, in realistically, Lyme is a clinical diagnosis. There are testing you can do in labs and we definitely do it more so, I feel like, to almost prove the case to the patient more so than to myself. I would say after meeting somebody and sitting with them for an hour and talking to them, I can usually walk away from that appointment with a pretty clear understanding if they have Lyme. We'll do the testing, like I said, more so because the patients sometimes need that black and white paper to show that they have it, because it can be something where you're like, oh, I can't have Lyme, or that can't be me, or I don't remember getting bit by a tick. That's a big one that I hear a lot.
I don't like, go outside. I've never seen a tick. Yeah,
right.
All this stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes the patient more so needs a little convincing than anything. But I can usually tell by the end of the appointment, I can usually clinically say, you know, I think you have Lyme, and I would say I'm right 98% of the time, because once you've treated enough people, it makes too much sense. The symptoms line up just too well, and all the unexplained issues make sense. So it's really a clinical diagnosis. I will do some blood work. I'll check inflammatory markers. I'll check a CD57 sometimes if people want to go like the traditional blood route. Almost never do like a Lyme blot or any of the, like if you were to go to a Western medicine physician or provider, you know, and they're going to do like their basic Lyme tests.
The Western blot.
Immunoblots. Yeah. Right. They're going to do the Western blot, immunoblots, and to me, that's just a waste of time and money, because those tests are at best 30% accurate. So we don't mess with those, but we may do a CD57 or check inflammatory markers. But the one we use most is Vibrant Wellness Lyme tick-borne test. The reason we use that is because it tests for about 150 different types of Lyme bacteria, from Borrelia to Bartonella to Babesia to Anaplasma or Ehrlichia. You know, it gives you a good range. And checks your immune response to it. So by looking at the immune response, you can tell whether your body's fighting it off or not. And so I've done that test for a couple of reasons. You can also use iGenetix, which has a test as well, but we tend to at our clinic, like the Vibrant Wellness Test, because it's really easy to read, it's really easy to interpret, and it's easy for the patient to understand kind of what's going on. It's green, yellow, red, you know, so it's like, you don't have it, you have a moderate amount, you have a high amount. So it's just easy. And the two reasons I use it, one, like I said, more to kind of prove to the patient, that you can show them the test result and say, look, it's positive. So it kind of like puts it in their head, okay, this is what I have to start fighting. Or if we start treatment and we feel like we're not moving as quickly in the right direction as we were hoping to move, then we do a test to see what, maybe are there some co-infections that maybe we didn't think about or treat for. So sometimes we'll go to it later on and to find out kind of what are we missing and where do we have to turn our focus to? Is it the Bartonella, the Babesia that's holding us back, or what's the problem, that the puzzle piece that's missing in the puzzle itself? So that's kind of testing in a nutshell, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. And you made a lot of really good points, because, and I want the listeners to kind of tune into this. Yes, we want a diagnosis, right? We need confirmation. And of course, we all have different opinions. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. I'm just a Lyme patient, right? But from my experience, there are a few labs that I trust, and Igenix is one of them. Armin Labs mm-hmm. out of Germany, and then Galaxy Diagnostics. Now, I hear a lot of people mm-hmm. using Vibrant Wellness, and the conflicting information I get back from it, again, just, you know, from Lyme people, is that it doesn't do a great job on co-infections. The other things are good. But nonetheless, my point I wanted to make with what you said, Chris, is when we go outside to do these lab tests outside of our primary doctor, right, which we know those tests are not very accurate, we oftentimes right. have to pay cash for it. And my thoughts are, why not go with a clinical diagnosis? Why spend $1,500 right. to get a test through Igenix? I understand a lot of it is kind of in our mind, right? Like, we need it black and white on paper, but this disease can already be so expensive. And so I really encourage people to try and go with a clinical diagnosis and try to not spend that extra money on testing versus spend it on treating, right? So,
yeah. Right. That's, I think, a great point is like, and I'll tell people, like, we can spend, and the reason, so your first point, I agree there is some concern with Vibrant Wellness, and I understand that aspect of it. But the reason I think I like it is it's like a third of the price of the Igenix test. Okay. And to me, again, if you're gonna, it may not be the perfect test, and there really is no perfect Lyme test anyway. So if you are going to do it because the patient wants proof, I would rather have you spend $400 on the Vibrant Wellness test and then save that extra $1,000 to go towards your treatment, because it's going to be good enough to at least show you that you're positive. It may not be the perfect test in general, but it'll show you you're positive. It'll give us an idea of what the problems are. And then we can use that extra $1,000 towards your treatment. So you make a good point, and I agree with it. But yeah, that's why I've utilized Vibrant Wellness more, is the cost effectiveness.
And we can appreciate that as a patient, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, and the other thing you say too, which I think is important, is not only go, you know, if I say clinically diagnose you with Lyme, which is great, but challenging the patient, I think, is far more conclusive than any test. I'll tell the patient, let's just start a couple of treatments and see how your body responds. And your body's response will give me 100% on whether you have Lyme or not. And that can cost as little as $40 or $50 to do a couple of, you know, herbal treatments. And that will tell you far more than any test will tell you.
Yeah, I believe it. Listen to our own body, right? That's right. A big tell, because we're all different and our bodies will tell us, you know, what's wrong. And that's one of the reasons I love muscle testing as well, because we're listening to what our body is telling us.
Right.
All right. So, and of course, this might be a little bit of a loaded question because we're all so different, but kind of like what you've, you know, learned throughout the years about Lyme disease and how people react to it, what is kind of your approach to to treating a Lyme patient? Do you have a specific order? Do you treat mold first, parasites, not at all? Or do you treat co-infections, or do you just kind of treat it as a bundle?
So I always tell all of my patients that everyone gets a very custom protocol for them. So there's no, I don't have any just like you don't come in and get a bundle, like a protocol bundle.
A blanket package does not exist.
Yeah, right. So there's just every, I would say, you know, the 1,000+ Lyme patients I've treated, almost none of them have the same plan. You know, they're all different based on what they come in, their issues, their problems, what they've tried in the past, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's the first part. But the second part is, with that in mind, typically the where I start is with the immune system, because in most Lyme patients, their immune system has been depleted and really beat down by this Lyme disease. So their immune system's on the floor and the Lyme has complete control of their body. So step one is to try to support the immune system. Mushroom-based supplements, elderberries, vitamins, you know, different ways we can approach IVs if they want to be more aggressive, but different ways to try to get their immune system off the floor so it can help and assist us in this process. I don't want to do all the work and then when we're done, take away the supplements or herbals, and then your immune system isn't ready to take over the job and you just end up right back to square one. So we start with the immune support right from the beginning, and that carries on through. So that way, by the time we're done with treatment, your immune system can kind of take over the workload. So that's very early on, we start with the immune support. And then usually 2 to 4 weeks after some heavy immune support, that's when we'll start layering in antimicrobials for Lyme. We usually try to start with herbals because, one, you can play with doses a little easier. You know, when you start giving people like a capsule or a pill, then you're stuck at that dose, you know? So if you were to give somebody, like, for example, doxycycline, like you give somebody doxycycline and they have to, that's the dose they take. If you give somebody an herbal tincture, you can start them off at one drop once a day, up to 30 drops twice a day. And there's a lot of room in between there to play. So yes, it can let you customize things reason. Much easier.
As well. Yeah.
You can customize them because nobody has a, you know, no, everyone can't tolerate high doses early on. And some people need, can ramp up faster than others, but it gives you options with tinctures as opposed to pre-made capsules.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you said that because I know that there are, you know, a lot of people, is it really, are they really sensitive to the treatment or is it just a really bad herx and they're not right. sure what to expect, right? But yes, and so I think that that's a fantastic idea is, you know, not only start with the immune system, like you said, I love that, but liquid tinctures, the tinctures I think yeah. are huge because just for that reason. And I always say, you know, start with the lowest dose possible. Give it 3 or 4 days, make sure you can tolerate it. Cause we can always add, you know, almost like cutting your hair off. Once you cut it off, you're not growing it back right. overnight. You right. know what I mean? Start right. slow yeah. and build up. And the best way to do that is with tinctures.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll utilize tinctures low and slow. It's not a race, to get up to the high doses, you know, as long as it takes you, to your point, you said like, are you sensitive to treatment or are you herxing? I would say in 95% of those cases, it's a Herxheimer reaction, not a sensitivity to the supplements. I've had really no patients who have had like an allergic or sensitivity reaction to the herbals. Every once in a while, you'll get a patient who's very sensitive to like alcohol. And in a lot of these tinctures, they do have, you know, a small amount of alcohol in them. So that would be one area that I have seen a sensitivity, pretty rare though. So that is kind of step two, is start working in some antimicrobial tinctures. And then kind of after 45 days, then we start layering in detox agents, you know, activated charcoal, bentonite clay. We start maybe adding in glutathione. We start adding in things to support getting rid of all the stuff we've killed, you know. So we've built up the immune system. We've killed off some Lyme bacteria. We've worked up our tinctures to, you know, maybe 10, 12, 15 drops. And now we need to start detoxing things out of our system, because typically Lyme patients are poor detoxers. So if you don't support the detox pathways, you're just going to end up with a whole bunch of dead bacteria in your bloodstream. And that's no better than active Lyme. You know, your body still is going to be fighting it off as if it's a active infection. And then we start getting more into the weeds of parasitic detoxes, mold detoxes, heavy metals. I mean, once you open Pandora's box, there's, you know, difficult to get it closed again. So there's so many other ways that this can go. But I would say in most cases, the first three steps are immune support, antimicrobial tinctures, detox, generalized detox. And then from there, it's kind of anyone's guess, because at that point, I've had patients in remission and I've had patients who have seen, you know, 2% progress. So, you know, that's when it starts to really get difficult from the provider standpoint. The first part of it, you know, you can't lose, you can't miss, because they're so bad that anything is going to be helpful. But then once you start getting some progress, now the tricky part is figuring out, where's the next step? Are you looking into mold or heavy metals? Are you looking into parasites? Are you looking into, you know, inflammatory autoimmune disease? Are you looking into the COVID virus or the vaccines that may be triggering it? So then there's a whole kind of new set of problems you're trying to discover.
Yeah. And I like that three-step process. I like the order that you do it in. And I often tell people, killing it or detoxing may be just as important as killing, if not more so, in my opinion. Yeah. Right. 100%. 'Cause like you said, if you're killing it off and you're not doing anything to detox it out of your body, this, you know, dead, whatever it is, these dead dying pathogens in your body are just recirculating in your body. Like, how can that make anybody mm-hmm. healthy? You know what I mean? You've got to get right. them out. So it's so important to make sure that all of your, you know, detox pathways are open. And a lot of times people just miss those, you know, simple little things that sound simple, but we oftentimes don't think about it.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed is, the longer I do this, is patients kind of at their worst in Lyme will tell me that they can sit in a sauna for an hour and they don't break sweat. Like, they don't sweat, they don't detox well. And then all of a sudden they'll say, after 4 or 5 months of treatment, they'll say, I went outside for a walk and I was sweating. Like, the first time in years that I started sweating during I was outside walking. And there, that's a good sign that detox pathways are starting to open up and you're starting to make some progress. So little things like that, people don't necessarily think about, but those are huge in Lyme treatment, to see that kind of progress.
Yes, they are. And while we're kind of on that sweating, right, because our skin is our largest organ, we for sure want to be sweating out these toxins as well as the other things that we do.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for the listeners on, you know, maybe somebody's at home, they're struggling, they can't afford a doctor, they can't afford treatment, but we know still that detoxing is important. Do you have any tips on maybe free things or very cost-effective things that they can do at home to kind of help make sure that these pathways are open and working?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the easiest and cheapest things you can do is get out into the sun. You know, the sun is a great tool, underutilized, I think, in a lot of cases. And the best time to go is when the sun is at that 45 degree angle, either on its way up or on its way down. That's when you get your best red light therapy. So when the sun's when the sun's up right above us in the middle of the day, we get a lot of blue light from the sun, which is the you know, quote unquote bad sun, the sun that we don't absorb very well. But when it's at a 45 degree angle from us, the path the sun takes through the atmosphere it has to go through so many layers of the atmosphere that it turns into red light. And then by the time it hits us, we're able to absorb it very well. So it's called photobiomodulation therapy. And it's just trying to get outside. You know, typically it's like the 7 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. time, or like the 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. time, depending on time zones and time of the year and all that kind of stuff. But when it's at 45 degree angle, it's really good red light therapy, which helps with your body's ability to detox. And then just movement is very good. Now, when you get into other things that can help, obviously keeping the gut healthy is extremely important. You should be having bowel movements daily. You know, outside of your skin, which you had mentioned as our largest organ and our biggest detox pathway, other things that we're going to use very effectively is our kidneys and our GI tract. So having a really good gut, meaning you're eating low inflammatory foods, you're trying to avoid sugars, you're trying to avoid carbs, you're trying to avoid gluten, and really opening up your gut as a good detox pathway. And then activity is really good for peristalsis and gut motility. So, you know, staying active and having a good bowel movement every day. And then as far as your kidneys, you know, you can do things like, you know, juicing celery or dandelion root tea or things like that, which are really good at promoting detoxing through the kidneys. So activated charcoal, bentonite clay are good over-the-counter options to help promote detoxing through the gut and binders. And then as far as through the kidneys, you can use, like I said, celery or dandelion root. And then use the sun and your own natural sweating to detox through the skin. And those three pathways are a good place to get started and always support the immune system. You know, and the lower your inflammation and the better your immune system's functioning, the easier it is for you to detox.
Right. Perfect tips. Thank you so much for that. And I especially love the sun one. I always knew that it was good, you know, those first morning hours of the sun, but I've never had it explained to me about that 45 degree angle and you getting red light versus the blue light. So fantastic information. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned earlier a little bit about mold and parasites. If we could talk about those, I oftentimes see people treat for several years and they've never treated parasites and, or they've never tested for mold. And oftentimes those are the two missing pieces. Fortunately, I did not ever deal with mold, so I don't know a lot about it, but I do know that there are, you know, some tests out there. I think that there are some controversial tests out there, right? Just like with Lyme disease. So I'm not really sure that information, but as far as parasites in my experience, is that I don't think that there's a proper testing for it. And I feel personally that it's just important to treat them anyways. Because I know when I was going through my journey, I actually did a stool test because one of the doctors said, you have parasites. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I have a parasite in my body. Like, it was mind blowing information. And I did a stool test, right? My listeners know I talk about poop. I talk all this stuff. And I actually saw parasites in my stool and I sent it off. And they said, no, I was completely clean. And I thought, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know what that was in there, but it was not normal. And so I just think that there's not an accurate test for parasites. And so personally, I treat a couple times a year. Even though I'm well, I think I'll always treat parasites because our environment's toxic, right? Yeah. So talk about mold and parasites and your kind of go-to on those.
Yeah. I mean, I think more and more people are starting to understand that how important or how terrible parasites are. I mean, there's even a lot of talk now about like people are starting to understand that like cancers are
sacks driven of parasites.
By parasites. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, so I think that is the idea of parasites are changing from something that is kind of like this random, like conspiracy theory type angle to like realistic problems that people are understanding what parasites can cause. I agree. I do stool testing on occasions for people to look for parasites when they have a concern, but I tell them, you know, even if the stool test comes back negative, I'm still probably going to treat for them anyway, because it doesn't, to me, it doesn't mean you don't have a when it's kind of like a pregnancy test, you know, if it comes back positive, you're pregnant. If it comes back negative, it just means that you weren't positive on the test. It doesn't mean you're not pregnant. So with a stool test and parasites, if it comes back positive, great, we know you have parasites. If it's negative, it doesn't mean you don't have parasites, it just means it didn't show up in the test. So parasites and then mold's the other. I mean, mold can wreck families. That's a hard one. People who are mold sensitive, you know, it causes so much problems because one, it's expensive. You're talking about testing the house, renovating the house. And then if that doesn't work, talking about having to move and find a house that isn't moldy and getting tests done. I mean, it's just the financial problems that come from mold is unbelievable. And I've seen it tear families apart and cause divorces and separations. And it's a devastating one. And the hard thing is, like, one person in the house may be completely fine and the other person is deathly ill from the mold, you know? So it's hard for the people to understand when they're not sick that there is a mold issue in the house, because they're like, I don't feel that I'm fine, but my wife is, you know, miserable and sick all the time. So mold's another one where it's, you know, you can test for mold and the benefit for testing for mold is when you test the house and then you test the person to see if the mold matches.
Type of mold, yeah.
Right, same type. And then you can at least put A plus B equals C together. And sometimes that can help if you're, you know, if you're in an apartment and you need to get, you know, remediation done, you can show like the landlord or a lawyer or something like, look, I'm sick. This is what my mold test says. This is what the house or the apartment shows. But there's a lot of controversy because sometimes providers will have patients take things that kind of promote the mold to come out through their urine more aggressively. So you can have testing where, I mean, if I tested 100 people and I mean, I could get 100 people to all show a positive mold test because we live in a moldy environment. So, you know, if you're instigating someone to pour out mold out of their urine, of course, again, we all have it in our system. So when it comes to mold and parasites, it's usually not the thing I start with, but if people aren't progressing or getting better as quickly as I'm expecting, I'm instead of wasting time at that 3 to 4 month mark, I'm probably going to start having that conversation with patients as to like, maybe we need to start treating or doing some kind of testing for parasites or mold. And I try to lean them into just the treatment aspect of it. But if they're really hesitant, you know, I'll offer testing options and see if they want to go that route. But yeah, those are like the hidden things that can slow down progress significantly. And if you aren't treating mold, heavy metals, parasites, if you're not treating, you know, some of these underlying multi-system inflammatory process issues, you can only go so far in the Lyme world of treating it, because your immune system's still going to be in fight or flight because of these other issues, and you're never going to really feel the benefit of the Lyme treatment coming into play. So you're always going to feel like you're still fighting something, and you got to get everything in your whole body controlled to really see the true improvement.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good point, because we all have parasites, right? Healthy people don't generally mm-hmm. have effects from parasites, right? They don't right. mess with their body in any way when we have Lyme or any type of underlying illness. I think that we're affected more by them. But that was interesting that you said, just because we may have mold in us doesn't mean that mold is causing our issues, right? So that's why maybe we're not sensitive in our house, but somebody else may be, that maybe not even sick with anything, right? They just can be sensitive to it. So yeah don't just right. because you have mold, maybe your house has mold, don't just go tear it apart, right? Like let's kind of figure yeah. the pathway out, because if you treat the pathogens, you know, the Lyme and such, sometimes you just get well, even if you have tested positive for mold, right? Like it's out of your body, but you're not necessarily right. symptom. You know, your symptoms are not coming from that. It's just that your body was so depleted from everything because of the Lyme and the co-infections and all of that. And so the mold just happened to be in there and you tested for it, but it doesn't mean that
right.
you have to treat the mold to feel better. Kind of like what you just right. said. And so that was a good point.
Right. That's kind of the big thing I try to make sure my patients understand is, we can test you and find a thousand things wrong. When you have Lyme, you tend to not do well with a whole lot of things, but we don't know what needs treatment until we get the Lyme controlled a little bit better. And then until I start treating the Lyme, I'm going to blame all of your symptoms on Lyme disease. And then once we get some of this Lyme treatment going and see how your body's responding, then we can start to see, okay, these symptoms may actually be from parasites or mold, not Lyme. But, you know, I blame everything on Lyme for the first 4 months until I give a good 4 months of treatment and kind of see what's improving and what's not. And then you can start to blame things on other problems as well.
I love, love, love that approach. I love that approach. If you're treating 3 or 4 months, you're not seeing that needle move, or maybe you're getting worse, then maybe we need to look at something else. But yeah, let's blame it on Lyme, because Lyme can be the cause of so, so many things, right?
Everything. Yeah. Anything and everything. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, if you just do standard labs, like my standard labs were not anywhere near normal on any of them for many, many years, right? Because Lyme just threw everything off. It's crazy the stuff that it can do to our bodies. So let's talk about MCAS, so mast cell, right? Like a lot of people have these really strong histamine reactions. And what I've been hearing a lot lately is they're treating, right? But any type of treatment that they do, it's exasperating the MCAS. So when you say that you start with the immune system first, is that something that's going to help their histamine response? Or how would you approach somebody if that was what they thought was going on, right? Like I can't treat because it throws my body, you know, in a flare with the histamines.
Yeah. So I think histamine response is a stress response from your immune system. So your immune system saying something is stressing me out. It, you know, just picture like the most common histamine response is allergy. So, you know, it's, let's say it's pollen season in Charleston and everything's yellow and you're not feeling well and you're all flared because the pollen is causing your immune system to be stressed because it's an allergen. So your immune system sets off this histamine response and you're congested and run down and stuff all the time. So to me personally, and not everyone agrees with this, but this is my take on mast cell or histamine response. To me, your histamine response is a reactionary response by your immune system to some kind of stress in your body. So to me, if you get the stressor controlled, then your immune system will be able to relax, calm down, and do its job more efficiently. So yes, I treat mast cell and I treat histamine, but only to try to mitigate and modulate your immune system so that way we can make more headway with the treatment. But in my opinion, once the Lyme's controlled better, once whatever these stressors are in your body are controlled better, the mast cell should in theory improve on its own because now your immune system isn't so stressed out. So I don't think mast cell is a root cause problem. I think it's more of one of those branches on the trees that happens due to the root cause problem itself. So I'll use things like transfer factor, for example, which it's a supplement that helps with educating your immune system, improving the IQ of your immune system, so that way your immune system can work more efficiently and effectively. So modulates your immune system, gets it to be less stressed because it knows the lay of the land better. We'll use things like low dose naltrexone, which is a prescription medication, to kind of modulate the immune system, reduce inflammation. You can use things like rapamycin. There's lots of options. Even just things like quercetin can be very helpful in keeping your mast cell controlled. But
oh, that's to interesting. Me, unless I you love fix quercetin.
Yeah, and it works great. It's a mast cell inhibitor. But unless you fix the root cause, to me, the mast cell is always going to be a factor. And once you get the root cause figured out, the mast cell should be easier to manage or should clear up on its own. So I treat that, and I hate to use this because I never like to put Band-Aids on things. You know, you like to fix the problem. I'll treat symptoms of mast cell in the short term in the hopes that we resolve the mast cell by getting the Lyme controlled long term. So that's my take on histamine.
And that I think that sounds perfect because I'm with you. I don't think that the mast cell is the root problem. It's the Lyme, it's the pathogens in our body that is causing that. And then once you get well from Lyme, and if you have some type of histamine response, again, it's a stressor in your body, something is going on. Our bodies are so amazing in the fact that they tell us, sometimes they shout at us, right? Like something is going on in our body we need to truly learn to not ignore these. You know, a lot of times when people initially get sick with Lyme disease, they gaslight themselves, not knowing, right? Like they're like, okay, I'm so tired. Well, I'm overworked. Oh my gosh, I have this really stressful project at work. Or, you know, I've got 10 kids running around. Anybody would be stressed.
Always an excuse.
Yeah, we make excuses for that. But truly our body is giving us signs. It's giving us signals. I mean, God created our body. It's just, we're such an amazing human when it comes to how our body works and how it functions and the way that it can tell us that something is off, right? Don't ignore it. You know, if you have a headache one day, okay, fine, you have a headache. But if you're getting headaches once a week, once a month, it's telling you something. Like it just is. Something is out of balance.
Yeah. And I would say I usually see that light bulb turn on usually between the like 12 and 18 month mark when all of a sudden I'll have a visit with the patient and they'll say, I was doing pretty well. And then all of a sudden I started noticing this symptom pop up. So I went back on this supplement or herbal or something and it, you know, got it controlled. And like, that's a great moment for an educator, which I think is what providers are, you know, are one of our main jobs is education, is then you actually saw your student listen to their body, identify a problem, and come up with a solution based on their history of what's worked in the past and get it controlled. And then we can talk about, okay, why do we think that happened? Or what do we think we need to do to make sure that doesn't happen again? But usually takes about a year to a year and a half for people to really start understanding what their body's telling them and get a good grasp of what it's asking for. Because that's really all it is. Our body's telling us there's a problem, there's a deficiency, there's something happening, and I need some support. And, you know, our job as providers is to find what that support your body's asking for. And over time, the patient gets really good at that, at understanding that. I mean, Lyme patients, I would say over half of our staff at Carolina Holistic Medicine are former Lyme patients, well, current to former Lyme patients, you know. So, they make the best providers, they make the best nurses, they make the best secretaries because they've been through it and can sympathize with the patients and kind of understand what it, you know, what they're going through. So yeah, you can, you learn so much through this process that like what you're doing, you know, it's good to be able to then pass that along to other people and let them know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, for sure. And we do say you don't get it until you get it. But that truly is obviously, if you say people get kind of in touch with their body, you know, 12 months, 16, 18 months, apparently I'm a slow learner. But that obviously it is one of the many, many blessings of Lyme disease for me was that I truly was taught how to listen to my body and know what's off when I have this symptom or I have that going on. I have all the tools in my toolbox, right? Open it up. I know which one to utilize and get my body back in balance, so to say. And I never before Lyme would ever even dream of, you know, doing anything other than going to my doctor and taking whatever pill they get.
Right.
And I think that there's nothing wrong with that, because that's how we were raised, unfortunately, most of us, right? But during this journey, you really do learn to listen to your body and learn about your body and learn the signs and things of what it's telling you. And that truly is a blessing from this horrible nightmare, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. I want to, we kind of talked on this a little bit. Is there any like one or two things that you see patients come into you that maybe have been treating with, you know, another practitioner and they're not getting well? Are there any of those missing pieces? I always say mold or parasites. Do you have that same thought, or is there anything else you want to add to that list on some, you know, and a lot of times it's even just our nervous system. It's that, because it's huge in keeping our body in balance.
So the two other things that I would say are important to look at are, so doing full hormone look, not because, you know, thyroid, cortisol, sex hormones, really mostly because what Lyme can do to your thyroid and what Lyme can do to your sex hormones and how it can drive your cortisol either into the basement or up to the, you know, sky. So I look at hormones more of a patch. You know, if the hormones need support, we can support the hormones, because it's really hard for your body to recover and heal if your hormones are really off. So again, not the root cause problem, but it's really hard to heal after Lyme if your hormones are off. So we'll balance the hormones in the meantime, so that way we can get you to the finish line and then hopefully come off of any hormone support. But thyroid tends to really get destroyed in a lot of women with Lyme, and cortisol tends to take a big hit with Lyme. So we like to look at those. And then the third thing I always test, and I usually recommend, is some kind of stool testing or gut. Look at the gut, because like I said before, use our gut as a detox pathway. Functional medicine, GI health is kind of the most important thing that we can do. You know, your immune system is curated in the GI system, inflammation in the GI system. Your stress starts in your gut. Your brain function, 70-80% of the neurons that go to your brain come from your gut. So if we're generating very unhealthy cells in the GI system, and we have inflammation or leaky gut, or we have parasites, or we have bacterial imbalance or yeast, it's just going to really, really slow down how quickly your body can heal. So making sure the gut is healthy is usually very high in my priority. And then making sure the hormones are balanced is also very high. So that's usually stuff I'll look at early on, maybe add it into the plan depending on what the numbers look like and what the testing looks like. But those are more supportive areas that, if they're off, it's going to be really a really high, steep mountain to climb to get to the finish line if your hormones and gut are unhealthy.
Right. No, and that makes sense. And like you said, we don't like to band-aid things, right? But sometimes we need to band-aid something so that we can get something else better that hopefully will allow us to rip off that band-aid and everything be fine. So yeah, no, that's
right.
That's
short-term, I'm okay with short-term band-aids. What I don't like is prescription band-aids where you say, hey, take this pill for the rest of your life and suppress your symptoms. But if something is going to help reduce that symptom and promote healing in your body for, you know, 3 to 6 months, to me, that type of band-aid is
tolerable, and necessary. Yeah. And I think necessary at times, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I'm going to save my last question as a little bit of maybe a controversial topic. Hopefully you don't mind chatting about it a little bit, but there's, you know, every year, you know, scientists are doing more research and more studies are coming out. And a lot of times the things that we thought were really good for us are really bad, and vice versa. A lot of the things we thought was really bad for us are actually really good for us. So I want to ask you if you know anything or can elaborate anything on this whole new hype out there that's going around a lot about nicotine, how it can have all these healing properties and allow, you know, be of a benefit to our bodies. And I'm assuming, I think I'm not talking about just smoking cigarettes, right? Or chewing tobacco,
right?
Like a nicotine patch, maybe. Like, I don't know. I don't know a lot about it. I just keep hearing it come up often. I thought, hey, I've got Chris on with me. And I thought, let me just throw this at him and see what he knows. What can he tell us?
Yeah. So, when you hear nicotine, the first thing people think is, you know, like you said, cigarettes or chewing tobacco and things like that. And that's not the case. I mean, cigarettes, it's not the nicotine that's the problem. It's all the other carcinogens and toxins that are in the cigarettes that are the real problems. We have lots and lots and lots of nicotine receptors in our body, just like we have CBD receptors in our body. Our body does great with nicotine and CBD, and we have these receptors as babies, and we usually don't supply them with the nicotine or CBD that they're looking for, which is fine. Everyone doesn't need it. But then when your body is struggling and we are able to supply those receptors with the nicotine or CBD or whatever it may be, it can really help support what's missing in your body. So nicotine, you know, specifically, nicotine helps reduce inflammation. So nicotine I don't use it as a, you know, it's not a curative
not something that's going to cure you, but it can help.
Yeah.
It can support,
like we talked about that, like 6 month Band-Aid type of thing, you know? So nicotine will reduce inflammation. It'll help support the brain to function better, help with brain clarity, help with energy, help with reducing stress, and then it keeps your inflammation down. And we all know, you know, you as a Lyme patient, me as a Lyme provider, that if your inflammation's high, your stress is high, you're not sleeping, you're brain foggy, confused, sluggish. I mean, what kind of place is that to live in for the next 2 years of your life, right? So by doing things, utilizing things like nicotine to help stimulate your brain and get your brain healthy and keep the stress down and keep your inflammation down, it allows your body to work more properly. It allows your body to heal and recover and you to feel like a quote unquote normal person while you're going through this journey. So we'll use nicotine lozenges. So we'll say, you know, pop a lozenge in your mouth, you know, 1 to 3 times a day to help with your brain, to help with your inflammation, to help with your stress. You can do like a 7 milligram nicotine patch on your arm once a day. Put one on in the morning, take it off before bed, and do that each day. The thing is with this is, in my experience, I would say 60% of people say it's outstanding. They feel great. It works just like they hope. Their inflammation's down. Their brain is working really well. They feel good. 40% say it makes them dizzy, lightheaded. They don't like how they feel. So it's not for everybody, for sure. But it's a very cheap, easy thing to try. And if you're in that 60% that works really well, it can be a really good tool to get you from point A to point B, and get there a little more happily, I guess, you know, in a better place than feeling like you're dragging through the mud for 9 months until you finally start to see some improvement. You know, this can speed up that process of how well your body heals. And, you know, if it works for you, it can be a huge game changer. If it doesn't and you don't feel well on it, you get dizzy, you get lightheaded, you feel like it's too much, you know, there's other options, but it's a cost-effective, easy to get option that a lot of people do really well on.
Okay. Well, now I'm glad I asked you that, because I had no idea that it would help with brain fog. And that, you know, me going through my personal journey, it was truly like a full-time job. And my brain, mm-hmm. I mean, at one point I didn't know my name, right? So my brain did not work, and I had post-it notes all over my house reminding me of simple things, an alarm set on my phone to, you know, take medicine every two hours and take this tincture and do that stuff. It's really hard to go through this journey when your brain doesn't even work, right? And a lot of times, you know, I lived alone, and so I didn't have a little babysitter there for, well, for a while I did have a caregiver, but you know, a lot of people go through this journey alone and they don't have that, you know, people to kind of be their mom and help them through this. And when our brain doesn't work, I mean, it's tough, right? And then when we feel so, so crappy, we often wonder, why even go on? You know, why do we want to go on? So like you said, a lot of times we do need to do these little band-aids that can help us get us through that piece that we're really struggling with, right? So we can focus on the big picture and actually healing our body and getting our lives back.
Yeah. And like, just to piggyback off that, I think CBD is also a really good option for people with Lyme to use. And, you know, cause sleep's usually an issue. Anxiety and stress is usually an issue, and CBD can be a good way to, you know, take some at night to help relax your body, help with sleep, help with letting your body recover while you're sleeping, you know, get into a good REM sleep. So, you know, there's, to me, unwarranted criticism of things like nicotine and CBD. Like, that just comes from people who on the outside hear nicotine, hear CBD and say, oh, like, that's, I've been told that's all bad for you. But really, when you look at them as nicotine, not as a cigarette, but nicotine as what it is, nicotine, and you look at CBD, not as like smoking marijuana, but CBD as in like what it is, CBD, hemp, you know, those can be very good tools to utilize to make you feel more like a functioning human as you go through this horrible process of trying to fight this very, very difficult battle with Lyme disease. And anything that can help move it in the right direction, even 5%, to me is worth a shot.
Yes, for sure it is. And I'm glad that you brought up CBD. And I do have a question on that. So you mentioned hemp CBD. So THC is the what gives you the effectiveness of being high. Is that correct? So CBD does not, it's like part of, I guess, the whole package of what marijuana is, so to say. So when people are looking at something like this, it's actually just plain CBD. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I like to get it from natural sources of hemp, you know, and right. Like, the idea is you're, so even places that it's illegal to have, you know, marijuana, like, you can still get hemp, you know. So there's, for example, in South Carolina where I'm at, marijuana is illegal, but you can get hemp. There's a place that I utilize called Cotton Patch Hemp, and they grow CBD, and it's perfectly legal. It's not going to, now, yes, if you take too much, you're going to be, you know, you're going to wake up tired and brain foggy. So, you know, there, it's not like there's no downside, but any herbal or supplement, you know, you have to know where your limits are. And that's why you should talk to people before you just start trying things randomly. But if you take the right amount of CBD, it can be very, very helpful. And yes, it's not going to make you high. It's not going to impair you. You just have to know what you're doing with it and why you're taking it and what to expect. So, yeah, it's the right type for you, the right type for what you're looking for, and doing it safely, just like anything else.
Awesome. I'm glad you clarified that, because, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there, like, just like what you said, you think of nicotine, you think of a cigarette, you think of THC or CBD, you think of pot and THC, right? And they're like, no, I don't want to do that. So we don't know what we don't know. So always good to learn new tools that are out there for us. Well, Chris, this has been amazing. I know I'm going to, as always, put the link to your clinic in the description of your episode. And I guess just one final question. Do you do telemed out of other states, or just locally people need to go in for treatment?
Yeah, no, we can do, we can treat people from anywhere. If anyone that hears this contacts our clinic, you can get information as to how you can become a patient, how you can see me, where you can, you know, how the whole process works. But yeah, you know, anyone interested, contact our office and we can see if we can make it work. And I'm happy and hopeful to see as many people as possible, because there's we estimate that probably at least 50% of the population has Lyme disease in the world. And that number may be actually bigger. And, you know, people just don't know who to go to. So I, you know, try to make myself as available as possible to anybody and everybody that wants help. So if you're looking for help or looking for help for a family member, contact our clinic and we can figure out how to make it work.
Awesome. I love that. And yes, I believe that so many of us are infected with this illness, but yeah. But our bodies are good. Our immune system, our terrain is strong, right? And so we have no symptoms, which is amazing for them. But right. Too many of us struggle.
For now, right?
Yeah. Until you have a stressor, emotional, physical trauma of any sort, and even COVID, right? I've seen that a lot. So anything to kind of shut our body down and stop us in our tracks. And here comes that Lyme. So, well, right. I know for myself, and I'm sure the listeners too, we appreciate practitioners like you that, you know, take the time to want to learn about what we go through and try to save our lives and give us our life back. So I appreciate you again for taking the time to join me, and thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you so much. Like I said, I think what's great what you do. Hopefully you're able to reach a good wide audience. And I've listened to, you know, many of your podcasts since you invited me on the show. And I think it's amazing. And the more information and good information we can spread, the more we can find help for people who feel like they don't have anywhere to go. So, thank you for doing what you do.
Amen. I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.